was the change in attitude of the Germans in the NATO structure, who, from the time I first went there, when they were practically agreeing with everything, as they picked up more and more of the tab, because, you know, when the Canadians moved their half out, you know who filled the vacuum.
Thank you.
They found that, I found that by the time I left, rather than agreeing with everything or sort of saying, gosh, that's great, let's all get together and do that, there was a slight tendency on the part of my German colleagues to say, we think we'll refer this to our chief of defense, and if he's in agreement, I think we could probably talk some more about it. But I think that was, you know, that was bound to happen, and this wasn't, I don't mean this as a resurgence of Prussianism or anything like that, but the fact that the Germans had by this time, and I think quite reasonably and fairly, obtained a high level of respectability. The old things of the past were becoming things of the past. I think people came to understand that we could stand by and watch things or know that things were happening in our own country, and possibly be found guilty of the same sort of things that we looked at the Germans after the war. And maybe they are happy, you know, who knows? Haven't been bugged recently, but who knows?
You had mentioned before, I'm not sure, didn't the Canadian ambassador go through a very rough period?
Oh yeah, the same sort of thing. He was saying, you know, that our cultural, in fact our background, our home ties, we're in the main with Europe, that Europe's security should be as important to us as it was to them, but the majority of our trading and so on at that stage was there. The esteem in which we were held as military people and as friends and so on over the liberation of Holland twice and Belgium twice and so on was still very, very strong in people's minds. As soon as they found out you were a Canadian when you were traveling around Europe in those areas, you were almost welcomed into anyone's home. You were treated with you know, the greatest of courtesy at border crossings and things like that, showing a Canadian passport. And they were welcoming you back into the country that you'd come into 15 or 20 years before to liberate them. And so they thought that we all understood each other and that we wouldn't do these sort of things.
Well, wasn't he stuffed rather badly?
Oh, yeah, he got about as much attention paid to him as I did, you know, writing and phoning to the chief of the defense staff saying, you know, we shouldn't be doing this, I don't think. Or I don't think we should be doing it this way, or I don't think we should be doing it to these people. And like the man said, I just bought my last bloody airplane from you, Charlie. It didn't sort of cut off all the ties, but it sure as hell was a poor way to start going to go into an association or an agreement and so on with the European Common Market 3 years later. Surely that's not the way you set that sort of a deal up. No. However, some of this is 20/20 hindsight, of course. But at the time, I know Ambassador Campbell and I talked at great length, sort of saying that we can see this causing us difficulties in our relationship with our NATO partners, both from the point of view of the amount of influence that we had felt that we exerted in the councils of NATO, or the amount of respect that was paid to our opinion by virtue of the sort of partner we were of the alliance, and indeed on into trade and every other relationship with Europe, of course, as subsequently transpired.
Now, Canada's ability to call the tune went by the by.
Not to call the tune, but to be listened to as sage counsel and a dependable partner. We didn't appear quite so dependable a partner.
And
people sort of said, if they can fiddle around with their contribution to NATO for political reasons, what are they saying today for what reason? You can see.
Yes.
Your reaction to me, if I, in effect, looked as though I was reneging on half of a bargain I'd made with you, next time we had a conversation, you'd sort of say, well, you know, where's he going to get it into me this time? I guess. This is the way it struck us, anyway, and we were perturbed, and we were perturbed, first of all, for what it was probably going to do to our country's reputation and position within a major alliance which was part of our whole security blanket. We were also concerned, as members of the alliance, that it was going to possibly have a spin-off weakening effect or an encouragement to degrade on the part of other partners. It wasn't going to do the alliance any good, it wasn't going to do Canada any good, and therefore it wasn't going to do any good. It was, to my mind, not the policy I would have chosen. I don't believe I'm the leading political scientist in the world today, but it's not the policy I would have chosen. I was not naive enough not to foresee exactly what the reaction was going to be, and the fact that our stature within the alliance and within the community of European nations with whom we dealt and from whom we sprang was going to be degraded as a result. And I think it was.
He didn't find any.
And it's a long fight back.
Granted, but it didn't ruin your naval career.
It didn't ruin my naval career. It didn't ruin my personal and professional relationship with my colleagues, because I had built that quite seriously. But it did affect the positions which I put forward for my country, their acceptance and the weight that they carried, and I don't think that should have happened. I don't think that was a good bargain, and I don't think that the government would do it again, because I think they've found that it's generated trouble in them in establishing this either meaningful relationship or contractual agreement or whatever it is that they were going to do with the European Common Market. And I think this is why Helmut Schmidt said, look, if you rearm your get yourself a new armored fighting vehicle and play in the alliance a little bit easier, you'd find it easier down at the other building.
So you think it's Helmut Schmidt?
Well, somebody jocularly said in the paper the other day he's one of the best defense ministers Canada's ever had. But it certainly has, certainly the position taken by some of our NATO allies to encourage us to improve our fourth thing has, as I'm sure, eased Mr. Danson's lot in going to the cabinet to get funding for capital programs.
After your stay at NATO, we're coming to a quick end here.
Yeah.
You.
What time do you have this thing? 10:30?
Till
10 here.
Till 10.
I came back and I had one more job, and that job was running the Canadian Defense Education Command. And I was responsible for running the military colleges, the staff colleges, the National Defense College, and all officer educational and career development planning for both, at the beginning for merely military personnel, and then at the end when I became chief of personnel development for civilian and so I started running a university at various levels of undergraduate and postgraduate sections of it, with the staff colleges, defense college,
and military college.
Great.
No problems after your other experience? Easy?
No, not easy, because I am completely lacking in a formal educational background. Whatever degrees I have are from the University of Hard Knocks. Generated through a whole series of courses, which if I wanted to add up the credits, probably I could find someone in the middle of Wisconsin who'd mail me a degree.
Yeah.
But, in which case I could become the president of another university. Oh, I remember everything. But it certainly was fascinating and interesting. I learned an awful lot very quickly about the operation of the academic life of Canada.
I guess what I'm getting at, though, it's not easy, but I was thinking of the difference from an actual military command, per se, into...
Well, I'd done a lot of things one way and another along the line in the plans business and in these peacekeeping things and so on that were really more politically oriented than operationally oriented.
Mm-hmm.
They were more that side of what went on in the military, and I had a good deal of association in various small jobs and tasks and things with external affairs, all of which I found very profitable, but all of which made it very easy for me to retire from the military, because I felt that I had ceased to be a big-time military operator and had started to be...
Now, where were we here?
You were trying to find out when I retired. My actual date, last date of service, was the 10th of November, 1973. And from February until November, 1973, I was on retirement leave because I had accumulated that much retirement leave. So from about the 5th of February, I'd stopped work. I think the 5th of February was, if you like, a Friday. Mm-hmm. And I stopped wearing that dreaded green suit then and started work on a new job on the Monday morning, where I was campaign director of the United Way Red Feather things in the Ottawa-Carlton area for 3 years.
No regrets with your services at all?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I enjoyed it all. No, not really. Not really, because I immediately phased into something else that captured my interest, so there was no void of sitting around sort of saying, my God, if I could go down to the mess and see the old guys again, or if I could get to sea for a day. I was immediately quite busy learning the fundraising business and how to operate, you know, charitable campaigns and things like that in Ottawa. So I didn't have time to sit around being sad, saying, gosh, I'm no longer a sailor, I'm nothing. And I did that for 3 years, and then I moved out here, and I got involved in being appointed to the advisory board for the military colleges with the background of experience I'd had. I was of some use doing that. So I was into that, and then into raising money for the Nature Conservancy and going around, you know, looking for birds that didn't have a patch of mud to land on, and also into some building management projects. And I got myself re-educated and qualified as a mortgage broker, and I started doing enough things that I didn't have time to worry about not being in command any longer.
What association with the military do you presently maintain?
Well, there's the association with the military colleges as being a member of the advisory board and the chairman of the Royal Roads section of that. And that's a close and continuing association. The other association is that from time to time they send the invitations to come to receptions and meet visiting firemen. I have no other strong association except things like RUSI, which I don't think are strong military associations. You meet a lot of people there who but I don't miss it at all, and I don't go out of my way to make sure that I get an invitation that goes on and everything in the naval mess. I'm friendly with enough people that if there's something going on that they think will interest me, they'll say, would you like to go to it? But I haven't reached the stage of phoning the flag lieutenant saying, I understand there's something and I didn't get an invitation to do it.
What's the chance?
No, yeah, no. And I've known people who've done that. And I think it's sad. It means that they haven't developed any other resources except this old sweat business to fall back on. You know, it's one step from there to beer in the Legion, eh?
Yeah.
And my God, if that's what the last half of your life is about, from 55 to 100, you'd be pretty slim intellectual pickings to fall back on.
Talk about passion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's sad when you find that.
There's a lot of that, particularly those the thin red line, Victoria. I mean,
that's right.
There's an incredible amount of that.
Yeah. I think it's very sad, and consequently, I have not. On purpose, I have not tried to associate myself too closely, because I think it could very easily become a crutch. And you know, you look forward to doing that and going and hoisting a few with the guys and talking about telling the old lies about how clever you all were and how close you came to a collision and got away with it. And
don't need it.
No, it's for the birds. If that's all you've got, you're sad. You should go back. If that's the thing you ought to, get out of town, go to university and learn some other career and start practicing it.
Sir, thank you very much for your time and your efforts, and it would be greatly appreciated. Thanks a lot.
Okay.